Just do what you can to survive the 9-10 months and have a healthy baby. I've already told you how many times I turned white as a sheet and ran to the bathroom in dread of seeing blood in my underwear. And I actually did bleed in all four of my pregnancies, and it was terrifying every single time. I took the bleeding episodes as messages from God to go right to bed. I had a new respect for how fragile all life can be. That is why the girlfriends advise that if you cut yourself some slack when you find out you are pregnant, miscarriages tragically do happen, and there is absolutely no reason for you to wonder whether there was anything you could have done to help save the pregnancy, such as give up the cigarettes or the bench pressing. Another biological reason that some women worry about miscarriage is a cramping sensation that often occurs in the early part of pregnancy. This cramping feels just like menstrual cramps, and if you feel them in the early weeks, you will swear that this pregnancy business was all a dream and that your period is starting within minutes. I must have been 10 weeks pregnant before I stopped sticking sanitary napkins onto my underwear every day, just in case those cramps meant business. If you're feeling them, relax. They almost always mean nothing. If they are painful and accompanied by any bleeding, ignore everything I've just said and contact your doctor. Fear of something being wrong with your baby. Your first uncontrollable fear that your child may be born less than perfect is your first inkling of how vulnerable you will be regarding the well-being of your baby. From now until the day you die, or gratefully succumb to senility, you will fret over the condition of your child. If your baby is not happy and well, neither are you. Here it is, not even born yet, and already you are suffering from the sense of dread about how you will cope if something happens to your child. We all know that, unfortunately, babies are sometimes born with health problems. Just as we all know that older children sometimes get sick or break their bones, need emergency appendectomies, or, God forbid, have even worse things happen. But our fears almost always exceed the probabilities of these things ever occurring. The vast majority of children are born with 10 fingers and 10 toes, and they manage to survive childhood disasters so successfully that the greatest threat to their well-being is the very real chance that we will kill them ourselves when they are teenagers. Even with all this in mind, it is impossible to stop rerunning the brain tape that plays out what you will do if something is less than perfect with your baby. This is because you are certain that if something happens to your child, you will have no other option but to die yourself. This kind of intense love and identification with your baby surprises every woman when she first recognizes it. When you comprehend its power, you will begin to understand why you will want to smack a 2-year-old who throws sand in your child's eyes, or torch a schoolteacher who suggests that your child might not be ready for the first grade after all. Anyway, back to the irrational fears that something will be wrong with your baby. I think that one of the reasons we play out every disastrous scenario in our minds during pregnancy is to toughen our psyches in the event such a horrible thing happens. It's as if we think that we have imagined it already, the shock or sadness might not be as great as it would be if we were caught blissfully unaware. I don't need to tell you that this is hoodoo thinking at its finest. You know it too, but it is something most of us need to do. Many women choose to have various tests to eliminate some of the worries about birth defects. Many states require that mothers give a blood sample for what is known as an alpha fetal protein test, which checks for spina bifida and can indicate whether the fetus has a statistically higher chance of being born with Down syndrome. There is also a blood screening test with genetic markers for Down syndrome. Ultrasound, which many pregnant women get at least a couple of times during pregnancy, can also reassure you that your child has a heart with all four chambers, a brain, and all the arms and legs it is supposed to have. If the baby is feeling particularly brazen on the day of your ultrasound or sonogram, you may even see its sex organs and know with reasonable certainty if you're having a boy or a girl. If you are 35 or older, you will probably have a genetic test that samples some of the pregnancy matter or the amniotic fluid. These tests are called CVS, chorionic villus sampling, and amniocentesis, respectively. They will be discussed further in the prenatal test chapter. A good result on these tests eliminate the possibilities of your baby being born with a number of birth defects. But if you think your worry stops here, you are pitifully mistaken. As soon as you think that your baby is spared the traumas of Tay-Sachs disease or Down syndrome, you creatively come up with other things to obsess about, such as whether it's going to have crossed eyes or ears like Prince Charles. Worry seems to be a necessary exercise for pregnant women. And for every bit of reassurance you get, you will substitute one more thing to worry about. Guilt provides all sorts of material for uncontrollable worrying in a pregnant woman. We become convinced that now is the time to pay the piper for all of the terrible things we did to ourselves in our carefree youth. If you, unlike most declared political candidates, actually inhaled when you smoked weed, you will feel faint at the prospect that your chromosomes are forever altered and your baby will have 12 toes. Imagine those of us who did worse things in the way of chemical experimentation. Unless we take the girlfriend's advice, we have more than 36 weeks of worry ahead of us. The most common fear of retribution comes to those of us who were drunk or high when we conceived. What a double bind. You get loose enough to take the chance of getting pregnant, and then you spend your entire pregnancy wishing you had been stone cold sober that night. Eventually, God willing, the baby is born in robust, good health. But those of you who are not completely distracted by the outrageous experience of having a full-sized baby come out of your insides, there will be a moment after that last push or when the doctor reaches into your cesarean section, when you steel yourself for the possibility that you are going to be presented with a baby that looks more like Bubbles the chimp than the Gerber baby. Believe your girlfriends. The moment you hear your baby cry and you see its squishy little face, you will feel as if all the angels of heaven have smiled on you. Then hold on to your seat, because you'll be entertaining the major leagues of worry. If you thought you obsessed about the little baby in your stomach, wait until you see how you wig out over this little baby you are now holding in your arms, who has immediately become the most important person in your household. Remember how the Shirley MacLaine character in Terms of Endearment hovered over her baby's crib to see if she was breathing? When she wasn't sure she'd heard a breath, she gave the baby a good pinch that woke her up howling. You may think that this is hyperbole for the sake of drama, but you couldn't be more wrong. My girlfriends and I were all convinced, primarily with our first babies, that we were keeping our newborns alive through the sheer force of our wills, that if we did not concentrate on them, they would stop breathing. We all held small mirrors under the baby's nose to see the moisture clouds that indicated respiration was indeed taking place. And those baby monitors that no mother can live without? Most of us kept the volume turned up so high in the early months that not only could we hear every breath and coo, we could hear the baby's fingernails grow. Fear of getting ugly. Some women, such as my girlfriend Shirley, have never been so beautiful and happy as when they are pregnant. Then they feel fulfilled as women. They glow with health and they revel in their ripe, round figures. As I've said many times, goody, goody for them. Call me alienated from my role as a woman or a reproducing creature, but I found the changes in appearance mildly disturbing at times, and sometimes downright horrifying. It's not that I think I look at pregnant women and find them unattractive. On the contrary, I think other pregnant women are adorable. I just have a hard time reconciling my own pregnant dimensions with the size 4 clothes in my closet. I also wondered whether my husband would still find me sexy or equally important, whether I would find myself sexy. The completely honest answer to both of these questions was no. But just as many girlfriends and their mates find the whole experience deeply erotic. More about this in the chapter, Sex and Pregnancy. I know it is boring and trite to condemn popular culture for promoting that thinness is next to godliness, but there is no denying that a pregnant woman may have an identity crisis in such a world. She may wonder whether she will lose her standing as a babe because she is growing a babe inside her. And as her clothes get too tight and her personal style gets challenged, she may wonder what she's even supposed to look like now. All pregnant women pray fervently that they will somehow be able to claim their former selves after the baby is born. But society sends mixed messages in this regard. On the one hand, you see a woman like Heidi Klum restored to her former beauty minutes after her baby is born, and you think that is what is expected of you. On the other hand is the universal comment, "She looks so good for having 4 children." As if having children were a justification for an appearance distinctly less than perfect. I must confess, however, that I will take a compliment any way I can get it, no matter how backhanded. Fear of turning into your mother. It is scary enough to make the transition from sweet young thing to mother, but it is way scarier to contemplate turning into your own mother. It happens to all of us. We catch a glimpse of ourselves in the mirror, and whether it is the set of the jaw or the way we crinkle our eyes when we smile, we recognize someone in our face who is not us. For many pregnant women, this transformation can lead to a full-fledged panic attack. Will you become a bossy, judgmental, rigid, and fretting person the way you always thought your mother was? You are sure that the mother you have always known never acted wildly and impetuously, never had sex in a jacuzzi, and never dreamed of having an affair with Johnny Depp. Or if she did, you never, ever want to hear a word about it. That you may go from being holly-go-lightly to PTA president is just too frightening to contemplate. Fear of turning into your partner's mother. I'm not talking about the fear that you would transform into a physical replica of your mother-in-law. I'm talking about the changes from your partner's lover and friend into his asexual nurturer. Sometimes in our determination to learn to mother before the baby is dumped in our laps, we start behaving like the mothers we grew up with, or worse, like the mothers our fellas grew up with. You'll know you are succumbing to this when you suggest that your guy wear a jacket, because he might catch a chill, or when you begin making his dental appointments and offering to drive him. This change is not usually made unilaterally, but rather with the cooperation of your partner. After all, who wouldn't want someone fussing over him? While most men maintain that their mother drives them crazy, they also love how their mother devotedly cared for them. You know how it goes. They want the Thanksgiving stuffing that their mother used to make. They want their shirts hung with the buttons facing the left of the closet, a la mom. And they want you to make them a bed on the couch when they are sick, just like as you know who always did. Husbands encourage this mothering, not just because they want to be babied, but because they too are intimidated by impending parenthood. And the only model they have for how mothers are supposed to act is their own mommy. It is amazing how many men develop an opinion about whether their wife is tidy enough or organized enough only when they learn that a baby is on the way. Only one thing is more troublesome than being held to the romanticized standard of motherhood that your mate has been burnishing for the last 20 years, and that is being compared with his first wife. This is where you really must put your foot down. I don't care, and you shouldn't either, whether his first wife had her Christmas cards addressed by Halloween and made her own apple pie. She is no role model for you. If she were, her name would still be on the credit cards, right? Fear of not doing pregnancy right. Out of our overwhelming desire to be judged perfect and the biological imperative to do everything we can to protect our unborn child from all the mishaps described above, we have set standards of proper behavior for pregnant women. If these standards were established individually between you and your doctor, I would applaud them. Unfortunately, many of us, through our inexperience and insecurity, buy into a whole litany of rules that are not only burdensome and unnecessary, but also guaranteed to make any woman feel inadequate. If your own self-control and guilt aren't enough to keep you on the path of perfect parenting, you will soon learn that the world is filled with people who feel it is their responsibility to monitor your performance. The girlfriends have dubbed these oh-so-helpful folks the pregnancy police. The only thing I hate more than a pregnancy police person is a male pregnancy police person. As if a person without a uterus, or at least a medical degree, has any right to comment on how a pregnant woman lives her life. Pregnancy police come from the same school as those complete strangers who feel free to pat your belly at the grocery store. Pregnancy police can be relied on to share all sorts of bullshit information. They all seem to know of a woman who had a 50-hour labor and then needed an emergency C-section because the umbilical cord was wrapped around the baby's neck, or some such horror story. Of course, the pregnancy police have an explanation for this crisis, and it almost always involves some shortcoming on the mother's part. Either she was sleeping on her back rather than on her left side, or she took the epidural too early for the pee-pee's taste, or some other bogus thing. Pregnancy police get tremendous satisfaction out of telling unsuspecting pregnant women that they should throw their microwave ovens into a toxic dump site, that they have been poisoned by the hidden formaldehyde in their mattresses, that they are exposing their babies to cancer by eating peanut butter, and that drinking a diet soda is tantamount to shooting heroin. The more distressed the mother-to-be becomes, the more fulfilled the pregnancy police feel. You would swear that they must have had perfect labors and deliveries and flawless children to have earned their credentials to tell you what you are doing wrong. But it never works out that way. It's like the child psychologist who lived next door to us when I was a kid. He was dispensing child-rearing advice on the phone in his study while his twins were setting the living room draperies on fire. One of my girlfriends remembers a time that she was in a beauty salon getting her roots touched up, and a complete stranger approached her with a look of tremendous concern and inquired, Don't you know you're not supposed to get chemicals on your hair when you are pregnant? My girlfriend, who already had half her head wrapped in aluminum foil with hair dye in it, went into an internal panic. She finished the coloring, but she left the salon near tears with the fear that she had ignorantly harmed her beloved baby. This hair coloring business is something you should bring up with your doctor and decide for yourself. But my babies were all subjected to my hair dyeing in utero, and they seemed just fine to me. My theory is this. If I had let my hair return to its natural brown and gray condition every time I was pregnant, my children might have been spared some indirect contact with chemicals, but they would also have been born to a single parent, because my husband would surely have left me after the first 2 inches of the real me had grown out. So if my kids didn't run the risk of biological imperfection, they would have run the risk of societal imperfection along with their insane mother. If my beauty salon story sounds extreme, just wait until you run into the pregnancy police at a party or restaurant. God forbid if you should have a glass of wine with dinner or participate in a champagne toast, even with a notarized letter of permission from your doctor. The PP will either look witheringly at you or actually come up to you and lecture you about fetal alcohol syndrome. Almost all of the girlfriends, none of whom, I hasten to add, drank more than a total of 4 to 5 glasses of wine or champagne over their entire pregnancy, found themselves more than once lamely trying to defend their imbibing to total strangers. Naturally, doctors will have their opinions about drinking during pregnancy, and I am neither condoning nor condemning drinking. I'm just saying that pregnancy is hard enough. What with the societal stigmas against hot tubs, aspirin, coffee, and artificial sweeteners, not to mention your own compromised sex life and your comical physical proportions, a single drink late in pregnancy seems allowable, if not outright deserved. But hey, I'm no doctor. Life is a series of calculated risks, and you and your doctor should work together to chart behavior that is healthy for the baby and livable for the mother. One last hangout of pregnancy police is airports. They congregate near the security clearance areas and will comment that you are nuking your baby if you walk through the x-ray machine. Now here, I have absolutely no complaints about their concern, but that is for personal reasons rather than any evidence I have regarding the danger of this kind of exposure to an unborn baby. I always made a big fuss about the danger of these x-ray machines so that I could be excused from passing through them. I was then hand-padded by a female security officer, and while I wasn't crazy about the padding part, I did like that I usually got to cut to the front of the line. For someone who is chronically late for flights, this can make or break my travel plans. While we are on the subject of air travel, check with the individual airlines to learn their policies regarding when they deem you too pregnant to be allowed on their planes. You know how fussy those flight attendants can be about labor and delivery on board. And then, if you were Victoria Beckham, you'd have to name your child after the airline or its hub city. Fear of being a bad mother. This fear usually comes from one of two possibilities. Either your own mother was so extraordinary, loving, patient, and selfless that you know you can never in a million years be as good as mother as she was. Or your mother was a selfish, neglectful, and undemonstrative person that you are terrified that you may be genetically predisposed to act like her. As in most aspects of pregnancy, there appears to be little middle ground. Much as we would like to, we girlfriends cannot predict what kind of mother you will be, although we have all the faith in the world in your mothering instincts. What we've all noticed is that pregnancy is the time to settle your issues with your own mother. Now is the time to look at your own mother with a grown-up eye, as a woman with the same demands, insecurities, and hopes that you are feeling right now. You may emulate your mother, but you are not your mother. You have the opportunity to appraise your own childhood and pick and choose the parts you want to share with your child and the parts you want to spare it. Motherhood is a work in progress. You have 9-10 months to prepare for some aspects of it, but you won't really understand what it feels like to be a mother until you have taken your child out of the hospital into your own home. It will be a love affair, but whether it will be love at first sight or a gradual thing varies from mother to mother. And you won't really know how good a mother you have been until your child sends thrilling and literate letters home from his Peace Corps jobs or sends postcards from his mobile home in the desert where he collects roadkill and puts it in his freezer. You just love away and hope for the best. All the while coming to the stunning realization that this unbelievable love you have for your baby could just possibly be how your mom felt about you. Fear of labor and delivery. See, I have saved the big one for last. This is the mother of all fears for a pregnant woman with her first child. At first, the fear of labor and delivery is really just the simple fear of pain. You have no doubt that it will hurt. A rudimentary understanding of simple physics will tip you off that a vagina has never experienced anything larger than a super tampax or a well-endowed fellow is going to balk at passing a watermelon through its dainty corridors. But you have no idea how much it will hurt. More than a bikini wax? More than a broken leg? More than a root canal? After you have had enough time to hear the birth story of every woman you have ever met, roughly 2 weeks from the day you announce your pregnancy, your terror will expand to include the fear that you will be a wimp, the fear that you won't be able to push hard enough to get the baby out, the fear that you will make poo-poo instead of pushing the baby out, the fear that you will faint or cry when they give you an IV, intravenous needle, the fear that you will faint or cry, period, the fear that the epidural will hurt more than labor, or the fear that the anesthesiologist will have a bad aim and you will be paralyzed for life. We won't go into the details of labor and delivery and what they feel like here. There is an entire chapter devoted to them later. But we will discuss the essence of the fear of labor and delivery as we, your girlfriends, see it. The terror in its most fundamental form is that you will be in a vulnerable position, in pain, with your legs spread, scared of the creature that is insisting on coming out of you, and no one will do anything to save you. Can't you just imagine yourself waddling into the hospital with the nagging suspicion that you are facing the trial of your life with a pitiful arsenal of Lamaze breathing, a Yanni cassette, and your hapless mate? You don't really consider other options because the pregnancy police, especially those Nazis in your prepared childbirth class, tell you that you are doing it wrong if you vary from this prescription. To them, I say, bullshit. A healthy mother and baby, achieved under any conditions necessary, is the ultimate goal of labor and delivery. We girlfriends want to let you in on a secret. There is no award ceremony for mothers after delivery. No announcements are made over the loudspeaker. No medals are presented to those mothers who manage to deliver their children without pain medication, without crying, and without making a mess on the delivery table. First of all, few victors would emerge. Second, the other mothers in the audience would throw their hemorrhoid pillows at the medalists. Here it is, girlfriends. Epidurals are great. Cesareans can save lives and curtail unnecessary suffering. There is no such thing as a second-class birth. Willingness to suffer or to put the baby or yourself in jeopardy, especially when you are frightened and tired, is a sign of questionable judgment, not heroicism. You have a choice. You can lie on a bed of nails to deliver your baby, or you can lie on a bed of downy feathers. No matter what you choose, neither your doctor, your nurse, nor your baby will think any better of you for suffering because of some possibly misunderstood notion of what is best for your child. And trust us, your baby's father will think that you are a goddess for at least 48 hours after delivery, with or without medication, for enduring what looked at times like a horror show to him, to give him a child. Keep this in mind. Those of us who took a little nip from the epidural tap are usually the life of the champagne celebration in our rooms after the baby is born. While our American Gothic counterparts are sound asleep with every capillary in their cheeks broken. One last bit of advice about fear and worry. Learn to roll with it because it doesn't ever really end. Even when you have the relief of holding a perfectly healthy baby in your arms after 9-10 months of agitation, you are just warming up for serious worrying. You will wonder, is he getting enough to eat? Or is he eating too much and getting fat? Then it's on to whether your child is the last one to be toilet trained in your mommy and me group, or whether she will make any friends. Then, as she gets even older and has plenty of friends, you will worry whether those friends are good influences on your child, whether they take drugs, whether they're in a gang. Add to that the abject terror all parents feel when their children are given driver's licenses and turned loose on America's highways, and you get a pretty good idea of why your own parents look so distracted most of the time you were growing up. But I digress. Chapter 6. You and your doctor. As you may already have deduced, the person you have known for years as your gynecologist transforms into your obstetrician on the day you find out you are going to have a baby. An obstetrician, or OB in pregnancy lingo, is the person responsible for caring for a pregnant woman during gestation, delivery, and postpartum recovery. I guess that means that when we give you your estrogen pills for menopause, they magically transform back into gynecologists. Doctor or midwife? Nowhere is it etched in stone that you need a medical doctor to assist you in childbirth. A certified nurse or midwife, or lay midwife, can be the primary assistant to a delivering mother, either at the mother's home or at a birthing center that is usually affiliated with a doctor and is near enough by ambulance to a hospital should an emergency arise. Quite a few of the more forward-thinking doctors are now sharing their practices with certified nurse midwives, and their patients see the doctor and the midwife on alternate visits. Since the vast majority of midwives are female, you get the girlfriend factor built right into the relationship, and you may find yourself more comfortable asking questions of a midwife, such as, is it normal to have so much gas that you would never ask your doctor, most of whom still are men as of this writing? There is also a belief that midwives might be less inclined than an overbooked obstetrician to hurry a delivery along through the use of Pitocin or an eventual cesarean section. My girlfriend Kathy opted for a home birth with a nurse midwife, and the midwife did everything from make her herbal teas to walk with her in the hills outside her house to help bring on regular contractions. The nurturing and reassurance were extraordinary. Unfortunately, Kathy found labor longer, more painful, and more frightening than she had anticipated, and she ended up falling into the tiny back seat of her sports car and being whisked to a hospital to deliver her son. Her biggest disappointment was that because she had waited so long, the doctors decided not to give her any pain relief because it was time to push anyway. I gleaned three lessons from Kathy's story. First, you can never get to the hospital too early, even if you end up spending the next 24 hours just walking the halls of the maternity ward. Second, save the home births, midwives, and underwater deliveries for second, third, and fourth babies. There is no way you can make an informed decision about how you want to manage your delivery until you have some realistic idea of what to expect. We girlfriends guarantee that you will be surprised, perhaps pleasantly, perhaps not so pleasantly, but you will be surprised, even after reading this book. And third, never elect to have a baby where you have no access to medication, or, God forbid, real doctors. You would tell yourself from now on, till labor begins, that you intend to try delivering without an epidural. But I can't think of a girlfriend who didn't take it when it was offered. Well, I take that back. My girlfriend Jillian never took pain medication. But perhaps if her husband had not been there promising her jewelry, if she can make it through, she, too, would have found the epidural a relief. I wonder how it would go if she were to stand beside him with diamond cufflinks while he was getting a vasectomy. Nor was there any medication for Corky, whose baby had had a heart problem that might adversely have been affected by it. Or Amy, who labored too fast for the doctor to have time to get the epidural into her without slowing down her progress. But both Corky and Amy maintained that they would forever have been grateful for such medical intervention. A postscript to this home delivery section. Childbirth is as messy as a pig slaughter. Why in the world would you want to sacrifice your beautiful sheets, not to mention your mattress, to such a thing? If you just can't stand the thought of going to a hospital, perhaps you should consider delivering at a 4-star hotel. It's still cheaper than a hospital. And the food and maid service are infinitely better. Wouldn't you just love to be in the room next door to that? How to select your obstetrician. Did you notice how quickly we decided for you that a medical doctor will deliver your baby? We apologize if you think we are taking too much for granted, but that's what girlfriends do. If you wanted something more statistical or analytical, you could have read any one of a million other books on pregnancy. Our job is to give you the inside scoop, based on what we tell each other, and our unanimous vote is to go for the traditional hospital birth with a godlike medical doctor for your first go-round on this birthing carousel. Remember, we are creatures of popular culture. We revere doctors as if they were the heroes and heroines we grew up watching on TV. It's the doctors who are so honorably portrayed on everything from Grey's Anatomy to General Hospital. Poor, innocent midwives never have their own series, even on HBO. In fact, they were tried as witches in Colonial Salem. So how do you find that perfect person? Well, you can do one of two things. You can stick with the person who has heretofore been your gynecologist, the person who fitted you for an IUD and treated your yeast infections. Or you can pick a new doctor on the presumption that your needs are different now and that perhaps your gynecologist isn't necessarily the right person to get you through this pregnancy. It can really be a mistake to think that your gynecologist of 10 years must automatically deliver your child. Choosing the person who would deliver your baby is subject to different criteria than is choosing the person who does your pap tests. There are many reasons to rethink your choice of doctors. First of all, you should ask your girlfriends what they think of their own doctors or local doctors. A real OB grapevine is this, and in most communities, a few doctors' names come up over and over. I found my doctor when I was seated next to a girlfriend of a girlfriend in a salon. She had 4 children and positively glowed when she talked about her doctor. When another girlfriend spoke on the same person in the same affectionate and irreverent way, I knew I had found my man. I am still a satisfied customer. It is also important to engage in some serious soul searching to discover what kind of patient you are likely to be. If you are assertive and full of questions, you will need a doctor who doesn't resent making big allowances of time for you or who does email. If you are frightened about the entire prospect, you must absolutely select a doctor who is protective and understanding. Those eager to attempt a natural and organic pregnancy would be well advised to find a doctor who not only supports your choice, but who has a special understanding of nutrition, environmental hazards, and treating colds with little more than hot water and lemon. It is particularly important that you and your doctor share the same expectations for your birth experience. If you have your own reasons for wanting a C-section under any circumstances, then you and your doctor had better be in agreement about that from your first handshake. It also wouldn't hurt to discuss with your OB candidate your feelings and his regarding pain medication. Not just whether you will get it, but when and how much. When my first ultrasound showed pretty clearly that I was going to have a baby boy, I asked my girlfriends with sons how they felt their doctors did on the circumcision. You may be surprised to learn, as I was, that it's the obstetrician, not the pediatrician, who does the tip clipping if you want your child circumcised in the hospital. If you don't think this is an important skill, just ask your mate's opinion. Some doctors seem to leave too much foreskin. Some clip it too far back. And it is still quite variable as to whether a topical anesthetic is used. Of course, not everyone circumcises these days, and most Jewish parents make a party of it. Should your husband be consulted? I don't think I know of a girlfriend who ever consulted her partner about her choice of a gynecologist, unless, like my girlfriend Kelly, she happened to be married to an obstetrician. Many of us have known our gynecologists far longer than we have our mates, and we never asked them what they thought of our boyfriends. But we girlfriends believe that when you're picking who will see you through this pregnancy, you should include your mate in the decision-making. He will, after all, presumably be far more involved in the pregnancy and delivery than he was in your pap tests. And for many reasons, it is critical that your partner feel almost as safe and comfortable with your doctor as you do. First, his child's entry into the world is in this doctor's hands. Second, your mate will presumably be at your side throughout most, if not all, of your labor. And it would be awfully nice if he liked the person who had his arm inside you up to his elbow. And third, he should feel as free as you do to call the doctor throughout the pregnancy to ask any questions he might have, or to secretly report any examples of your insanity. Any suspicious or alarming symptoms that I experienced during pregnancy, I tearfully reported to my husband, and he called the doctor for me. When I started spotting, I was so panic-stricken that I couldn't form the words to speak on the phone, and my husband called and described my condition. Labors, too, often tend to be reported to the doctor by the partners. Either the women are too involved with the contractions to carry on conversations. A reliable sign that a woman is in productive labor is her inability to get out of a fluent sentence when a contraction strikes. Or they are worried that they might not really be in labor. At a moment like this, a good partner will step in and remind you that you are entitled to call your doctor at any time, whether the baby is hanging down to your knees or not. We are not saying this to alarm you, but it will blow your partner's mind, even more than it blows yours when a baby emerges from your interior, since he's the one with the bird's eye view, and he might really need someone to lean on. Let's not forget that your mate loves you very much and doesn't want anything bad to happen to you. Or more to the point, he doesn't exactly want you to die in childbirth and leave him with this baby that he hasn't even met yet. He will insist on a doctor who will guarantee that you will come out of this ordeal alive and well. Ultimately, however, your needs are paramount, and the final decision should be yours. Male or female? Should your doctor be a man or a woman? It goes without saying that nearly any obstetrician in your community who has been recommended to you and who is in good standing with the American Medical Association and hasn't been investigated on 60 Minutes will be competent to care for you during pregnancy and delivery of your baby. Whether you would prefer a female or a male doctor is purely an emotional decision. That is not to say, however, that it isn't a crucial one. We girlfriends uniformly believe that your emotional safety and well-being are as critical to a successful birth as your medical support. This is a time to throw political correctness aside and honestly appraise what type of person elicits your respect and trust and, in turn, trusts and respects you. This should probably be a private evaluation of your preferences, so that you are not swayed by a mother who thinks all good doctors are men, or a sister who says she has never met a man who treated her as if her brain and spinal cord were connected. Do you prefer a male doctor because he seems fatherly and physically able to protect you from harm? Or perhaps you prefer a female doctor because she is more likely to empathize with you? As one girlfriend asked, would you hire a mechanic who had never driven a car before? Then there's the whole issue of sexuality. Many of my girlfriends, including Mindy and Marianne, were happy with their choice of female obstetricians because they felt less inhibited during physical exams and delivery, and they were freer to express their emotional concerns. These girlfriends also mentioned the not important fact that their husbands were reassured by having female doctors for such an intimate relationship. In addition, there can be real pressure on a woman to maintain her attractiveness around men, since many of us learn this lesson early in life. And some aspects of pregnancy can make a woman feel less than attractive when exposed to her male doctor. This can create additional headaches, which is the last thing a pregnant woman needs. On the other hand, you may ascribe to my philosophy that you grab your harmless pleasures where you can, because pregnancy can be a long, dry spell. The doctor who delivered 3 of my children is a man, and I had a great time flirting with him and taking special care with my appearance for my monthly visits. Of course, this doctor looks like Clark Kent, so I was not the only pregnant woman in town making a fool of herself. Especially in your last couple of months of pregnancy, your male doctor may be the only man on earth who is still interested in how you feel. A good many life partners have fallen by the wayside by that time. Remember, 9-10 months of pregnancy will lead to about 12 visits to the doctor's office, and labor will involve hours of intense bonding between you and your doctor. So you had better pick carefully. What type of practice? Delivering babies is certainly the cheeriest medical specialty, but the hours suck. Except for scheduled inductions or C-sections, babies' births are unpredictable and often tedious, and always seem to involve middle-of-the-night calls to the doctor. Chiefly for this reason, 2 or more doctors usually band together to divide up the number of sleepless nights they will have to endure and try to get a vacation or two in each year. With the group practice, each time you go for your monthly checkup, you're examined by a different member of the group. This ensures that you and all the doctors have at least shaken hands before you deliver a baby together. Then, when you go into labor and call your doctor, whichever member of the group is on call at that time will meet you at the hospital. So, not only can you look forward to the surprise of, it's a boy, or it's a girl, but you can have the added surprise of hearing that it's Dr. Hamill, who will be attending your delivery. For my first pregnancy, I chose a doctor in a group practice. My favorite doctor had the most seniority in the group and never got out of a warm bed to deliver a baby. That task always went to a newer member of the group who was still earning his or her stripes. Since I had a scheduled C-section, I not only had my favorite doctor on hand, but another doctor in the group, since 2 doctors usually attend this type of surgery. The other doctor was a woman my favorite doctor was dating at the time. It was really a sweet experience watching the 2 of them work together. They worked with great professional skill, but they kept making goo-goo eyes at each other across my gored abdomen. By the way, 10 years later, I learned that when their romance sputtered, the entire medical practice was blown to smithereens. My next 3 children were delivered by a doctor in a solo practice. About 2 of my pregnancies ago, he brought in a nurse midwife to help take some of the pressure of the routine examinations off himself. But he did the delivering. In the rare event that he was unable to deliver a baby, he had an arrangement with a doctor in another practice to step in for him. Knowing what to expect, at least in this one respect, was a real blessing. All of my doctor's patients ask two questions when they find out they are pregnant. When is it due? And will you be in town to deliver it? One girlfriend was so terrified that the doctor's wife would insist that he take a family vacation when the girlfriend was due that she offered her parents plush and within driving distance of the hospital, beach home, to the doctor and his family just so she could keep him near. This is not the place to speculate about the personal toll a solo practice takes on a doctor, since we are talking about someone you are going to have deliver your baby, not marry. But the decision about whether to select a doctor in a group or solo practice is important. It all boils down to this. In a group practice, you will never be sure who will join you in the delivery room until the moment arrives. On the other hand, a solo practitioner may have intestinal flu when you go into labor, or worse, be skiing with his family in Colorado. And you could end up having a stranger's hand on your cervix. At least in a group practice, you have shaken that hand. Since this book was first written, solo practitioners have all but disappeared. Insurance gets stingier and stingier, and it's hardly worth the paperwork and malpractice coverage costs for a single doctor to go it alone. More and more of us are in managed care programs, whether we like them or not, and the doctors who will get us through gestation may be chosen for us. Still, if you do not feel comfortable with any of your caregivers, stand up for yourself and for your baby. You can request a different doctor until you are satisfied that you found the one that makes you feel safe and understood. Do not be afraid of your doctor. Doctors in general can seem too important, too busy, or too intimidating for us to bother with all our questions and concerns. We might want to ask something of great importance to us, but worry we will be wasting his or her time, or worse, look stupid. This applies when we are being treated for anything from chronic heart conditions to bunions, but it is particularly problematic when we are dealing with pregnancy. A pregnant woman's relationship with her doctor is uniquely complex because, in the vast majority of cases, she is not sick. Except for supervision of her condition and the growth and development of her pregnancy, the pregnant woman offers relatively little to treat medically. The only cure for her condition is delivery. And until that thrilling time, she and her doctors are waiting for the proverbial watch pot to boil. This basic condition of good health is usually cause for gratitude on the pregnant woman's part. But it can make her feel sheepish when she needs some emotional support or reassurance from her doctor. Since our view of doctors is that they are in the business of saving lives, we are often reluctant to intrude on that mission unless we are convinced we are at death's door. My girlfriend Whitney sat for nearly 20 hours with another girlfriend who was going through an early miscarriage. The girlfriend suffering the miscarriage had been through this ordeal before. And since she knew what was happening to her physically, she saw no reason to bother her doctor with her news until it was over. What she needed was reassurance. A good painkiller wouldn't have been a bad idea either. But she was reluctant to be unnecessarily demanding of her doctor's valuable time. I'm sure her doctor would agree with me when I say, this was a big mistake. All good obstetricians are fully aware of the emotional nurturing that a pregnant woman requires. And if they aren't, you should drop them like hot potatoes. I once had a gynecologist who was treating me for infertility. Can you believe it? 4 children later. One day he walked into the examining room and asked, "How are you?" I started to cry and say I was feeling pretty blue and frustrated. He did an about face and called over his shoulder as he walked out of the door, "I will send in a nurse to talk to you." Not only did I immediately stop seeing him, but I wrote him a pointed letter. Most gratifying of all was my pleasure in trashing this doctor all over the girlfriend's grapevine. Hell hath no fury. If the girlfriend's guide accomplishes little else, I would be satisfied if it succeeds in encouraging you to get your money's worth out of your relationship with your doctor. Trust me when I tell you that it takes a long time to get over a disappointing pregnancy. If you feel ill-prepared, frightened, or slighted in any way, you will still be talking about it 20 years from now. I have a girlfriend who still talks about how inadequate she felt during labor, and I think it was her doctor's job to bolster her confidence. Women who end up with C-sections, when they had their heart set on a natural childbirth, can be filled with grief unless they are confident that it was a mutual decision and that it was the best thing to do. So go ahead and call your doctor, or go visit him or her whenever the urge arises, because I promise you, that you are no more neurotic or insecure than the rest of us. And if she can't take your call at that moment, leave a message. If you don't hear back by 6 o'clock that evening, call when you wake up in the morning and begin pestering her office. As Glenn Close said in Fatal Attraction, I won't be ignored. What if you think you are falling in love with your doctor? Sometimes the combination of dependency and admiration that you feel for your doctor may make you think you're falling in love. Relax. It is strikingly common for a pregnant woman to fall in love with her doctor, especially when her doctor is a man. But either way, perhaps it is a form of hostage identification syndrome, as when Patty Hearst fell in love with her Symbionese Liberation Army kidnapper. The theory goes that utterly helpless people identify and develop a relationship with their captor because that person is all that stands between them and certain death. Sounds about right for a pregnant woman with her first child and her relationship with her doctor, don't you think? You may also get a crush on your doctor because you are desperate for any kind of attention, and your obstetrician joins you in your obsession at least once a month. As unique and special as your pregnancy is, it tends to lose its fascination and compelling aspects to everyone but your mother and you about halfway through. And, unfortunately, a pregnant woman's need for attention is as deep as the Grand Canyon. I hate to be so blunt, but it is important for you to remember. You did not invent pregnancy. And eventually you will have to resort to paying people to remain captivated by your condition. Your friends have their own lives, which will occasionally distract them from your crucial project. And if your mate is like mine, even he will eventually tire of waking up to touch your belly every time the baby moves. Your doctor, however, will continue to be solicitous and inquiring right up until the end, assuming, of course, that you have selected your obstetrician based on the girlfriend's guide criteria. Plus, he or she will eventually become the only person you encounter who doesn't irritatingly ask you, haven't you had that baby yet? Chapter 7, Prenatal Tests. There was once a time when the only medical test routinely given to a woman suspecting she was pregnant resulted in a dead rabbit. It's true. The old-fashioned way of diagnosing early pregnancy was to administer a serum of the woman's blood to a rabbit, and if the rabbit died, the woman was officially pronounced pregnant and ineligible for PETA membership unless she had a fur coat to swap for the rabbit. Just kidding. There wasn't much testing after that, just a lot of weighing and the occasional check for iron deficiency. Welcome to the 21st century, girlfriend, because nowadays you may have testing for pregnancy-related issues even before you conceived. If you used an ovulation predictor kit, you're already accustomed to conducting toilet science. If you've had a bit of fertility treatment thrown in, you've been ultrasounded and blood tested regularly. We are a society that is obsessed with our biology, and few conditions are more lab-friendly than pregnancy. You can even test for that at home now, and most of us do, but that doesn't stop us from testing again at the doctor's office, just for a reality check. Depending on your age and some other factors, such as how comprehensive your medical insurance is, a variety of medical procedures might be recommended or even required of you during the next few months. Another disclaimer. Once again, let me make it clear that this is not a medical book. My purpose is simply to make you aware of the basics of pregnancy and describe them for you as your girlfriend. Think of this chapter as an introductory foreign language course where you learn how to ask where the bathroom is and how to order dinner so that you don't look like a complete imbecile. Once you get the lingo, you'll know how and when to ask your doctor or practitioner for the real information. The following list is not to be considered comprehensive in any way, since there's some new test or new technology every year or so. It is just the collection of the girlfriend's most commonly experienced tests and procedures. Having more or fewer than these tests is not in itself a cause for worry. If you have more, it doesn't mean you have more problems. And if you don't have them at all, don't curse your healthcare provider because you think you're getting gypped. These tests and screenings are just on the menu for you and your doctor to consider. The pregnancy test. There are basically two kinds of early pregnancy tests, the kind that uses blood and the kind that uses urine. Both of them detect the hormones that indicate that you've got a little critter in your belly who is already making himself known by excreting certain chemicals and making your body react. Oh, and by the way, neither of these tests uses injections into any of Earth's creatures. The urine tests are so reliable, almost 100% when the result is positive, that your doctor's office will probably use a test much like the one you already took in your bathroom. Occasionally, a blood test is done to confirm the pregnancy, especially if the doctor wants more information about all your hormone levels to see if you're mixing the right cocktail of hormones to maintain a pregnancy. They want your blood. More commonly, the blood tests pregnant women get early on are to check a variety of things that will provide necessary information about your health and that of your baby. They all require a venous puncture, meaning they put the band around your upper arm and stick a skinny needle into a promising vein. It stings, sure, but it's the freak factor and occasional lightheadedness that upsets some of my girlfriends. Just turn your head and breathe a deep cleansing breath and it will be all over. Plus, you'll get a Band-Aid to show off for the rest of the day. It's usually just one stick, and then they fill up several vials with your blood to send off to the lab, so stay calm. Here's what they will probably be testing for. 1. Your blood type. Do you even know it? And to see if you're Rh positive or negative. If you are negative and your baby is positive, your pregnancy will require special care to protect the baby from anemia. Ask your doctor for a full explanation if you really want to know. 2. To see if you are anemic. 3. To check for STDs. 4. To see if you've had rubella, German measles. 5. To see if you have hepatitis B, a liver virus. 6. To see if you have HIV. Remember, all of these things, if detected, can be dealt with safely. You may just need to work more closely with your doctor to take care of yourself and your precious little baby. Vaginal cultures. Yuck. During the first prenatal visit, in addition to the blood test, a pap test is usually done. You know the drill. Stirrups, speculum, and a giant Q-tip to swab off some gunk and a few cells from your cervix to check for STDs and anything yeasty up in there. These samples are put into some petri dishes or on slides and sent off to a lab. You probably won't hear anything about them unless there's a suspected problem. While he or she is down there, your doctor will also take a gander at your cervix, which is the little tunnel between your vaginal canal and your uterus. So few of us really know what exactly is down there. A good sign is when the cervix appears tightly closed and is beginning to take on the pinkish hue that indicates there's a good blood supply down there. After the first visit, there will be few, if any, more vaginal exams during pregnancy. I think the feeling is to let sleeping dogs lie. Here's your cup. There's the bathroom. What's your hurry? Get used to this one, girlfriend, because it's going to be the greeting you will receive every time you visit your doctor or practitioner. Gradually, you will lose any inhibitions you may have about wandering around with a cup of your own body waste. Keep in mind what we told you earlier about losing your aim as your labia swell. You might want to watch the stream for a second or two before pausing to put the cup in it. A nurse or lab tech will set it next to all the other cups, and while you're wondering which one is yellower than yours and another is light as straw, she will put a test strip in it, and you'll probably walk away never to think about it again until next month. This test checks the levels of protein and sugar in your urine. While some sugar in the urine is completely normal, too much can be a sign of diabetes. Later, a more specific test can determine if you are at risk for gestational diabetes. Protein in the urine might indicate a urinary tract infection, which will probably come as no surprise since the discomfort should have tipped you off. Kidney problems or, late in pregnancy, if you have high blood pressure, which can result in preeclampsia, aka toxemia. Again, talk to a doctor about this. All I remember when my girlfriend Jamie had this was that her hands, feet, and face got swollen as if she had eaten too much salt and was retaining water. She delivered by C-section after a brief hospital stay. And the baby was perfection, and the mom was too, after she calmed down. Keep in mind, my sweet, all of this stuff can safely be handled, and you and your baby will most likely be just dandy. Blood pressure. Another feature of every prenatal visit will probably be the taking of your blood pressure. This is a fairly present little ritual that isn't invasive in any way. My best advice is to stop chattering away to the nurse while she's doing the test, or else you'll distract her in her counting. And she'll have to start all over again. This might not be an imposition on you, but it could annoy her. The reason for this test is that pregnant women have a greater risk of high blood pressure, and who wouldn't under these circumstances? And we all know that high blood pressure can lead to preeclampsia/toxemia. Ultrasounds, sonograms. You say tomato, I say tomato. Unless I'm missing a fine distinction here, these are the same thing. Maybe the grams are the photos and the sounds are the images on screen, but we're splitting hairs. If you ask my girlfriends and me, this jolly test is like a porthole to paradise. Seeing something early in my pregnancy they told me was a baby, but looked like a llama bean with a little heartbeat, convinced me that I really was going to be a mommy. Up until that point, I'd often suspected that it was a dream or some terrible mistake. I cried like a baby, as the old pun goes. The way ultrasounds work is that a dildo-like thing is placed in your vagina. They even put a condom on it and some lubricating gel. But don't get too excited, girlfriend. Or its rectangular cousin is placed on your belly. Yes, you get gel then too. And it's warm in the nicest doctor's offices to make sound waves that can be translated into images we get to see. The doctor or technician performing this likes to get a look from several angles, so he or she would be moving the transducer, as the gel-coated thing is called, around a lot. No problem over your belly, but a tad uncomfortable when it's inside you. Not to worry, however, because you'll be transfixed by the staticky image on screen. Besides, this is a good time to try out those Lamaze breathing techniques everyone raves about. For a good ultrasound image early in pregnancy, you will have to drink a lot, and I mean a lot, of water for the transducer to pick up good sound, especially if they're using the tummy transducer. The vaginal one requires much less water, and it's worth asking in advance which they will be using or if they will use both. The doctor or technician will tell you if you should come for the ultrasound with a full bladder. Do you have any idea how much water it takes to fill your bladder, girlfriend? Judging from my experience, it took more water than I've ever drunk in my life. It was the first time in my life that I got nauseous and wanted to barf from drinking water. My teeth were floating by the time I had my first ultrasound, and I was terrified I was going to lose control and drown everyone in the room. Later in pregnancy, when your baby is floating around like a seahorse in an aquarium, the ultrasound will not require you to drink still more. The technology of ultrasounds is so fine now that even the most experienced doctors can not only count the chambers of the heart and inspect the spine, but they can measure the fetus's neck and its thigh bone for any evidence of a genetic irregularity. And if the baby is feeling saucy, it might just reveal its private parts to you. If you see a penis, don't jump to conclusions, however, because even baby girls look to the untrained eye like they have a penis. If you don't want to know your baby's gender, tell your doctor and ultrasound tech right away so they don't spill the beans and can tell you when to look away from the screen. Keep reminding them, too, because my girlfriend Garbo's doctor started referring to her baby as him by about her 7th month, and sure enough, she had a boy. It's the little slips that we moms catch and obsess over. This test is also the most certain way of knowing before they actually arrive if twins are more in there. A couple of years ago, Oprah had a woman on who had IVF and had 2 fertilized eggs put back into her body. Both of them developed into 2 babies, and she gave birth to 2 sets of identical twins. Get out! Anyway, this is something that can be detected through ultrasound because the placentas and sacs can be inspected pretty thoroughly. Even those of us who say we want to be surprised will need a month or 3 to adjust to the prospect of having an entire family in one gestation. Plus, as a rule, doctors hate surprises, so they'll want to know right away. One of the most precious sights a mommy-to-be can see is the image of her baby moving around, or, still more enchanting, sucking its thumb just like a real baby. These are the photos, and occasionally videos, that you'll be showing your friends and family for weeks. In fact, you'll probably still have the little Polaroid picture stuck on your refrigerator door with a magnet months after your baby is born. Some health plans don't regularly cover the cost of ultrasounds, but you'll probably get at least one around the 6th or 7th month. And if your age or your doctor's suspicion that some other situation requires a closer look warrants it, you'll get at least one more. I would have liked to look every month, or even every week, so I can kind of understand why Tom Cruise bought his own ultrasound machine for his baby with Katie Holmes. Still, for a Scientologist who espouses silent birth, there's a lot of sound waves banging around in there. Hey, his machine isn't busy right now. Maybe you can go over and use it sometime. Glucose tolerance test. Sugars